is left to try to defend the city and do what he can. He's not really the warrior his brother was, but he's... Anyway, at one point, Denethor, his father, with real sarcasm, but he asks the right question. He says, is there anyone here who will do his lord's will? As difficult as it is to have to defend this city from this huge army of demons, basically. And you see, this is what the New Testament asks every Christian. Is there anyone that will do the Lord's will? Not yours or mine, but the Lord's. You see. And you know the Bible, hopefully well enough, to know that when God calls people, both in the Old and New Testaments, into the life of faith, you know, they go from usually the frying pan into the fire. And then what they learn in that transition is that God can be trusted to accomplish what he will accomplish. And much of the difficulty in our lives as Christians is we are too busy accomplishing our will to even know what his is or even give it much thought. And while there are, much of what God does is certainly hidden from us, thank God, and we are often passive, you know, players in God's work. There are also those outward aspects of life and ministry and mission that are there to be taken hold of and to be used and done, but they require sacrifice. They require not my will, but thy will, to be prayed with some meaning behind it. You know, and not just reciting it, you know, because it comes after the thing in the liturgy, that point in the service, you see. So here in this in these brief paragraphs, you see St. Paul marching through what to outside eyes, the Roman letter gives us that perspective. This is a man who's brought up on these religious charges, and he's been, they're conniving to kill him, and they're politicking, so he's taking him into custody and delivering him. So this is a very ordinary series of events, but what the Romans don't know is that they are agents of God's design. They are serving as God's instruments to move St. Paul from Jerusalem to Caesarea, and then finally, after a long journey, to Rome, and there to watch over him so he can write his letters back to Corinth and other places during the years he's in Roman house arrest, until finally he gets his hearing before Nero, who was the emperor, who at the time Nero gave him a death sentence because he didn't like Christians too much. And all the while, even in Paul's death, the Romans are God's instruments. They are working for him. Now that's a lot for modern people to swallow, isn't it? We have this secularized, kind of scientific, rational view of the world where many of us, even in churches across the country, across the West, are de facto atheists when it comes to believing that God is actually present in the world. God, for millions of people in churches today, is a spiritual pipeline that runs directly from me to him. And if he's any good at all, God simply does for me what I need done. So that the reality of God's work in the world is only important if it does something for me. If my life benefits from it. If not, I can just ignore God entirely. Well, you see, it's not that simple. On the other side of the coin here, in the texts like this, is that they remind us that, you know, in the end, it doesn't matter what you do or don't do. God is going to carry out his purpose. You know, so it's kind of, you're with him or against him. You know, you're with the plan or against the plan, you know. It's easier if you swim with the stream instead of against it. But either way, the stream is going to go where it's going, you see. When you swim against the stream, what happens to you? You get battered. You wear out. You don't make any headway. But when you go with it, you're carried. You see, you're carried along. That's what grace means. Where God carries us in his power through life, through the suffering. And so many fail to have any sense of the joy of faith, a real knowledge of Christ, because they spend their lives trying to jump around and avoid all the pitfalls, things that they consider to be pitfalls and obstacles to a successful life. And they never find Christ in the midst of suffering, where he is so often experienced. Not just in the suffering of others, but in terms of really confronting your own demons and your own difficulties. Not trying to ignore them or pretend they aren't there, or practice a kind of delusional way of life, you know, kid yourself, but to really be honest in confession so that the power of absolution can actually do something, you know. If you don't confess honestly, the power of God's forgiveness is kind of falls flat. It's there, but it doesn't need anything. You see, that's what alcoholics learn in AA. You know, when you finally have the courage to confess what a complete derelict and a human waste you've been, and how you've hurt yourselves and others, and you have people around you who listen to this confession and don't condemn you for it, but try to help you move beyond it, what happens to a lot of these people? They can quit drinking. They can quit abusing. They can start to live again because their confession was met with acceptance. And they actually confessed something that needed to be something real. They were through pretending.